Welcome back to the show, everybody. Hope you had a nice few minutes there. Everyone had a nice break. Happy to be back. Big thank you to our pal Terry once again for talking to me on the phone. Really appreciate his time. And, of course, we'll have Saxman Rick Metz coming in here to talk to me in a few segments. But other things we'll cover in this hour. Of course, we'll end the day taking a look at some events that happened on this day in sports. But coming up this next segment, I'll talk about kind of my feelings about Tyson returning to boxing. And then, of course, we'll dive in a little bit to the fourth and final fight card on Fight Island that comes your way tomorrow. And caps off a pretty incredible run there of the first few four cards that happened on that Fight Island. But first, let's start back in baseball. Because it had to be decided before the first pitch of the Yankees and Nationals last night if Major League Baseball was going to expand their playoffs this season. And they have. They agreed to it. They will be moving from 10 teams to 16 teams this season. Eight teams from each league will make their playoffs. Essentially, the top two teams in each division will make it, with the division winners being seeded 1 through 3, the division runner-ups being seeded 4 through 6, and you have two wild card teams still, but now instead of being the 4th and 5th seed, they are the 7th and 8th seed. I think it's a great idea, and something that, you know, made me even happier about this decision is the no picking of opponents. Because when I saw that, it was very briefly mentioned in some of the early reports about, hey, if this happens, this is something they're considering. I talked about it yesterday, didn't want to see that. Happy I'm not going to see that. Because that's not really the beauty of sports. To be lined up and matched up based on where you finished is all part of it. It's all part of how you compete, where you ended up, and who you have to go through now. And they will be seated up as normal. One will play 8, 2 will play 7, 3v6, 4v5, and they'll make their way through that playoff structure. So I think all in all, cooler heads prevailed. It makes sense the way they set it up. An interesting part to this, though, in the first round, because my question was yesterday, what's the format going to look like for the wild card round? Is it going to be 8 single elimination games? Is it going to be best of 3? Are they going to do maybe two best of 5 rounds to open up? They decided on best of 3 series, but it's not going to be, higher seeded team hosts the game, lower seeded team hosts the game, then if needed be the higher seeded team hosts the third and deciding game. No, instead, the higher seeded team will host all 3 games, which at first I thought, that's a fair advantage to give a team that's a higher seed. I mean, it's going to be a short series, so, I guess that's fine to give them all 3 home games. But then it made more sense when you eliminate what is really travel that doesn't need to be there. Because if you play 1 game, travel, play 1 game, travel, then have to either play a 3rd game in that series or travel to your first game of the division series, that's just risk you don't need to take, right? I mean, if you're, the Tampa Bay Rays, and now you have to go on the road and play, let's say the LA Angels there in the first round, do you really want to be making 2 cross-country trips right now? I don't think so. So a smart way for them to do it, I think, in giving the better seeded team home field advantage for 2, maybe 3 games if needed. And then everything goes back to normal after that. The LDS goes back to best of 5. The LCS in the World Series goes to best of 7. So the format makes sense, and I appreciate the way that they lined it up. They didn't go with any kind of kooky choose-your-own-opponent type of thing. So I'm okay with that, but I'm still just curious why they chose to do that this year if they're that concerned about a fall surge of this virus. That was what I mentioned yesterday, and seeing the confirmation of the decision last night and digesting it a little bit more this morning. I mean, this is an interesting idea to expand the playoffs, but again, what if it's all for naught? What if they get halfway through the first round, or they get through the first round, get ready to start the division series, and have to call off the rest of the season? When you really could have just stuck to your typical 10-team playoff and tried to get through it a little bit quicker this year. So I'm really torn about this, because I am a playoff man, and because another big question I had was, should this be a permanent change now? Should they just stick to having a larger playoff field? And like I said, the playoff lover in me, the tournament lover in me, says, oh yeah, keep it like this. Let more teams, if you're going to put these teams through 162 games, let more of them compete for a championship. But I think the question really becomes, how much are you really sacrificing the quality of teams making the postseason? Are you sacrificing it too much? Because as Terry and I were talking during the break, if we had time, I was going to ask him how he felt about playoff expansion. Unfortunately, we didn't have time, but we talked a little bit about it there during the break, and he brought that up, which I think is going to be the biggest point for anybody that's against playoff expansion in Major League Baseball, and that is you're watering it down too much. You're putting teams that don't really deserve to be in the playoffs. Because according to the Elias Sports Bureau, had 16 teams made the playoffs from 1995 to 2019, 46 teams would have been at or below 500 and that would have made the playoffs. So if you look at that, you go, yeah, that's too many teams that aren't at least, you know, whether it's a game or two games, just at all, they're not above 500 and they're making the playoffs. So I think in that case scenario, yeah, it sounds like you're watering it down. You have to remember, that's 46 teams throughout a 24, 25-year span. So while that initial number might look big and might look like a sore thumb, it when you think about it across that whole time span, it doesn't seem as though it's that much of a sacrifice for quality of the game. And then if you look at, you know, the rest of those stats, only three seasons would have seen playoff teams, all playoff teams, have a winning record, which would have been 2000, 2003, and 2009. And the only time in the past 10 seasons, so in the 2010s in that decade, the only time we would have seen all playoff teams at or above 500 was 2012. So again, looking at those stats, I think it's easy to say, yeah, you'd be watering down the quality of play so much. But again, if you're going to go with 162 games in a season, the door is just so wide open for teams that, I mean, if you're in the NFL and you struggle with injuries, or if you have a guy that has to miss a game or two, then that's it. He couldn't miss, you know, it's one or two weeks. I mean, he has to miss 1 or 2 weeks, that's 1 or 2 games. In a typical baseball season, even in this baseball season, if you have to miss 1 or 2 weeks, that's 10, 12 games maybe that you're missing out on, and that could be a lot, and that's, you know, just the smallest kind of increment that you could see someone miss time in that, in, you know, time of, in, you know, terms of MLB season or in terms of games. It could get a whole lot worse as well. So I think if you're going to make teams play 162 games, I think you have to allow a few more teams in. And I get that 16 might be too much moving forward. 16 might be a little too many teams moving forward. I can appreciate that and I can understand that based on those stats. I still think, however, maybe 12, maybe 14. I still think there should be some more playoff teams in the mix. So let's say you did 7, right? Let's say you decide to do 14 playoff teams and that's 7 from each division. You could take the top 3 division winners. Because those should be rewarded, right? That's something that goes across the board in sports. If you're good enough to win your division, even if it's at a 500 record like the Eagles were last year, even if, or around a 500 record, even if you are at that point, if you manage to win your division, that's good enough for a playoff spot. And I agree with that 100%. So you can either do the 3 division winners and then the top 4 wild card teams, or you could do the top 3 division winners, the 3 second place teams as they're doing this year, and then take your top wild card team. Because if you think about that, typically, obviously, your wild card team in a typical 10-team playoff is going, your 2 wild card teams are going to be your 2 best second place teams, unless a third place team, if there's one division that just stands out way above the rest, typically they're going to be second place teams that make that wild card spot. So if you're going to essentially take the 3 division runners up, I think you can hold back on watering it down a little bit more if you just take one more wild card team. Because then with 7, which I'm really starting to open up to. With the NFL and Major League Soccer going to 7 teams in the playoffs, that seems like a good number because I think the best team in your league or in your conference should get a first-round bye. That makes sense. If you're the best team in your league, you shouldn't have to worry about playing as long of a postseason as teams that weren't as good as you in the record column. So I think if you went with 7 teams, you give that top team a bye, and you set it up 2 plays 7, 3 plays 6, and 4 plays 5. And you can do the same thing they're doing this year if you want to do a best of 3 and have the better seeded team host all games, or you can do single elimination. But I think that playoff expansion should be a permanent thing for baseball. You don't have to stick at 16 teams. I can appreciate that maybe this year it's a little bit nicer, but moving forward, if you get back to 162 games, I can appreciate people that think it might get watered down too much. But I think 12, ideally 14 teams should be able to play in the playoffs for Major League Baseball. So I think playoff expansion, maybe not to this much, maybe not to this many teams in 16, but playoff expansion should be a permanent change in Major League Baseball moving forward. So we'll have to see how, I mean, really we'll see how it plays out this year, because I mean, if they don't get all the way through it, if, you know, the coronavirus does cause them to call off the remainder of the season, whenever that may be, maybe they roll that over to next year. Because during the initial conversation between Major League Baseball and the MLBPA, they were talking about expanding playoffs for this season and next season. But those talks fell through, and they ended up settling on just this season expanding playoffs. But if they don't get through it all, maybe they can look at expanding it again next year, and maybe not to the length of 16 teams. If you're going to go back to 162 games next season, maybe think about a 12 or 14-team playoff. So we'll have to see, and we'll see how these playoffs go. Hopefully, we get through it. Hopefully, they happen. But because of that, I mean, I made my predictions on Wednesday, and I made my predictions thinking it was going to be a 10-team playoff. So now that it's 16, I got to pick a few more teams. So I'm not going to go super in-depth like I did on Wednesday. You can listen to the podcast version of the show. Essentially, no division champions are changing. I will say I'm changing one. I will say I'm not proud to say it. But I am going to do that. But if you want to hear kind of the full, just, you know, description or reasoning as to why I went with the teams I did, I believe Wednesday's podcast can give you that information. That you can find that on the Spencer Wilson Show page at sportsreno.com. But I do have to expand the playoff predictions, so I will do that now. And the one change is going to be in the American League East. There's probably somebody out there laughing at me or saying, ha, because of it. But I went out on a limb on Wednesday. If you didn't listen to the show, I went out on two limbs, really, in the American League division. But in the American League East, I went out on a bit of a limb, and I picked the Rays to win the division. I said it would be a tight race, and I counted on their creativity to possibly pull off a shocker. However, with the playoffs expanding, Tampa Bay doesn't need to worry about being the division to automatically make the playoffs. They can kind of do what they need to do to get to second to automatically make it, or try to be one of the two best third-place teams, essentially, and get a wild card berth. So I don't think Tampa Bay will be as desperate anymore, and I counted on that being a big catalyst to them being aggressive and creative and trying to find ways around the Yankees. So because the playoff field has expanded, I'm going to say Tampa Bay isn't going to be as dire. So the Yankees, I think, will win the American League East. Now, that is the one change I am making to my division champions. I know, I'm not proud of it, but I'm going to do it. It's happening now. Let's all just get over it. But I'm picking the Yankees to win the East. I got Tampa Bay coming in second, making the playoffs out of that division with the Yankees. And then I have the American League Central still being won by Minnesota. I have the Chicago White Sox coming in second place, making the playoffs. And I have Cleveland being a wild card team out of the American League Central. In the AL West, I'm still sticking with my underdog there. Still, I'm staying on that. That's the one limb I am staying on. You know, that's the one ledge I'm going to commit to, and that is the Angels winning that division with Houston coming in second and Oakland getting the final playoff. Or, I don't know, the seventh or eighth seed there. Oakland being the other wild card team coming out of the American League. Then in the National League, I keep Atlanta winning the NL East. I am going to pick Washington even without Juan Soto. I still think they have enough pieces to get through that division and be second place. So I'm picking Atlanta and Washington out of the NL East. Then out of the Central Division, I'm sticking with Cincinnati as my champion. I'm going to have Milwaukee as the second place team, and the Cubs making it as a wild card team out of the Central. Then in the West, I'm going to keep the Dodgers as the champions of that division, keep Arizona as the second place team, and I'm going to throw a little more love to a team that's, that got some underdog vibes, and that's the San Diego Padres. So there you have it. Just a quick recap here. My six division champions, Yankees, Minnesota, the Angels, Atlanta, Cincinnati, and the Dodgers. These six runners-up, Tampa Bay, the White Sox, Houston, Washington, Milwaukee, and Arizona. And the four wildcard teams, Cleveland and Oakland from the American League, the Cubs and the Padres from the National League. So we'll see how close I am. Hopefully I'm respectably close. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, Mike Tyson is back in the ring. I'll give you my opinion on that, and we'll take a look at the final Fight Island fight card of this initial stretch going down in the UFC in Abu Dhabi. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, as the UFC gets ready for their fourth Fight Island card in a row, that is not, you know, that's not the only story dominating the combat headlines right now. As we have had a fight announcement, there will be an 8-round exhibition fight going down between Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. That fight will be at Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson, California. And I feel like this is one of those things that started off as a yes, yes, and then ended up with it. It's one of those yes, yes, no situations. Because you saw the videos of Mike Tyson just beating the punching bag, as you heard Terry there kind of talk about there in the first hour. Those videos of his workouts and him putting work on the bag and still showing a lot of, you know, decent pace, but a lot of good power still in the punches. And there was rumors he could be coming back, and that again, you're kind of like, yeah, make a comeback, get back into the ring, and then it actually gets announced. And I don't know about you, but I kind of had this feeling of, oh, no, he's really going to do it? I mean, the fun thing is just kind of having the idea, right, the thought of Mike Tyson kind of coming back, because we still think of him, I think at least on first thought, you still have those flashes of him in his prime and knocking guys out. But then you remember he's 54. And maybe he shouldn't be stepping into a boxing ring at that age against a guy in Roy Jones Jr., who he himself is, what is he here? He's 51. So you got a 54-year-old and a 51-year-old going at it. And while, again, those two names sound like a lot of fun to see Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr., I mean, two guys that were, you know, kings in the world of boxing during their prime. So to hear those first two names, I mean, I thought it was a different Roy Jones Jr. at first. I thought that can't be the same guy. There's no way. But it is. You have 54-year-old Mike Tyson going up against 51-year-old Roy Jones Jr.? I just don't know. And Tyson's last fight came in 2005. So he hasn't even fought for about 15 years. June 11th, 2005 was his last fight. And he got stopped after six rounds of fighting by Kevin McBride. And that was at the MCI Center in Washington, D.C. And then before that, he got knocked out in the fourth round by Danny Williams. That was back in July 30th of 2004. So his last two fights haven't looked good. And he was already 38 years old back then. What's going to change, you know, 16 years later? So I'm puzzled by this. And, you know, he came back and he was on First Take. They asked him why, and he just flat out said, because I can do it. And you know what? Hey, more power to you. If that's how he feels and he wants to do it, who's going to say no to him? Who's going to say no to either of these two men? Good luck. I don't want that job. You know, and again, he's facing another man that was once one of the hottest guys in the world of boxing. So as intriguing as this fight may look, let's be honest, these two men could sell out any stadium in the world, most likely. But the big question that comes up is this good for boxing? That was the main question that came up, is how is this going to affect the boxing world? And again, even though it seems rather intriguing, this seems like it's going to go more down in flames than rise up to the occasion, surpass people's expectations. Because it could just turn out to be a big disgrace. I mean, if both men are wheezing around the ring after two rounds, if their power drops off after the first few rounds, it's just going to be embarrassing for them and for the sport. Also, what if these men does get seriously injured? That's going to make it look like a really bird brain decision for two 50-plus-year-old guys. I mean, honestly, you hear Terry and I talk about that a little bit too in the first hour. But what if one of these guys just gets absolutely throttled and now all of a sudden they're being rushed off to the hospital or something like that? I mean, this could be a scene that could turn real ugly real fast. And even if it's a good fight or an entertaining fight with both of these men, being so popular in their prime and being able to kind of keep that popularity going, I think it's going to be hard to watch anyway, just knowing how good they once were. Again, both were essentially kings of the boxing world, and there's no way they're going to be close to that kind of quality. So it's already going to be a little hard to watch, and I was interested when I first saw it, but now not so much. I'm actually pretty nervous for it now, and not in a good way. I'm really nervous someone's going to get badly injured in this fight for nothing, really. It's an exhibition fight. And let's say one of these guys does, let's say that Mike Tyson knocks out Jones Jr. or Jones Jr. knocks out Tyson. Where do they go from there? Are we really going to talk about either one of these two guys advancing in the world of boxing and possibly getting a title fight? That's ludicrous. It's absolutely ridiculous. So with all the work that the heavyweight division has done, getting back to the forefront of mainstream media, because kind of in between that time of Tyson, And Lennox Lewis, all those guys that made the heavyweight division so must-see in the 90s, to in between that time and the time we really have now. Guys like Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, even Andy Ruiz with his upset of Joshua there. Heavyweight boxing has done such a good job of getting stars. Stars that are in their prime and can give you some legit entertainment. And it could all be undone with these two guys getting into the boxing ring. So, I think it's unfortunately going to become a sideshow for boxing. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope that these two guys go out there and do deliver a fun fight, because that'd be fun in a nostalgia sense for guys like Terry or any other, fan of boxing that's watched it since the 90s, since Tyson got into it, whether they were, in their childhood like Terry was, or whether they were already kind of getting into their adult life. So from a nostalgia standpoint, I think it could be a lot of fun. And, we'll see how the build goes. We'll see how these two guys kind of treat each other. We'll see how intense it gets. Because if it does turn out to be somewhat entertaining, if it does turn out to be a show and a fight that surpasses expectation, no one gets too brutally injured, maybe we do get a finish. Mike Tyson's last win did come in February of 2003 when he got a first-round KO over Clifford Atine. So, I mean, there is some sense that maybe he could get a finish. Roy Jones Jr. as well actually fought most recently in February of 2018 and won a 10-round unanimous decision over Scott Sigmund. So Roy Jones Jr. has been fighting, in these years that Tyson hasn't. So we could very easily see Roy Jones Jr. step up and take care of Tyson. But also, if Tyson takes care of Roy Jones Jr., it is intriguing. I will give them that. And it's pay-per-view. I don't know if I'll actually pay to watch it. I may wait to see what the actual quality of it is and if it's worth it. Buy it and watch it maybe the next day or something like that. But I'm very nervous and on the fence for what this could bring to the world of boxing. So hopefully it doesn't turn out to be this sideshow and a joke essentially in the world of boxing. Because not only would that be disappointing for the sport itself and where it's kind of, you know, it's really rocketed back up into mainstream attention here in the last 4 or 5 years. So I think it would be disappointing for the sport and really be disappointing for the heavyweight division, and even more disappointing for the way that Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr., seeing as how they really have two legacies that could be extremely tarnished in this fight. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how the build goes. We'll see how the fight actually is. But I'm nervous. I'm not as excited as I thought I would be. I'm a little bit nervous for that. But, you know, time will tell. But also the UFC putting on their fourth and final fight card on Fight Island. This has been a stretch that has been very successful for the UFC. All the cards beforehand have gotten a lot of really good feedback and have gotten a lot of good fan interaction and have just been able to please a lot of people. I mean, the UFC has done a great thing in just being the one league that didn't want to quit, right? Dana White trying to find every little nook and cranny and everything he can expose to try to get his fights on a card and somewhere on TV and happening again. And they've done that with Fight Island. They've done a great job with Fight Island, putting together this flash forum that they're calling it. I am a little bummed, again, that it's not on the beach, or we can't see the beach at all, because that was a big part of the whole pitch from Dana White. But nonetheless, it's been an exciting environment. It looks like a very fun six-fight main card. Big names, Alex Oliveira on there, Carla Esparza, Fabricio Verdum, Mauricio Hua on the card as well. So a lot of big names wrapping up Fight Island. And the main event, a big one in the middleweight division, Robert Whittaker, who less than a year ago was UFC middleweight champion. It feels like a decade ago he held that belt, but he didn't. It was less than a year ago. So he looks to kind of get back into that middleweight title picture. Darren Till, of course, moving up from welterweight to middleweight after making a run there. He's actually getting a welterweight title shot against Tyron Woodley, coming up a little bit short, though, fell to submission. But should be an interesting fight there in the middleweight division. Some interesting numbers and stats that stand out with these two fighters. Seven, or just in the UFC alone, as this first one is, because seven consecutive UFC main events in which the betting favorite has won. A streak extending back to Amanda Nunes beating Felicia Spencer on June 6th. So that does bode well for Whittaker, who at the time is a minus 125 favorite. So we'll see if he can keep that stretch going. 48 leg kicks landed by Whittaker in his 2018 win over Yoel Romero. Still the most in a middleweight bout in UFC history. And Darren Till himself started off on a great run. The first 18 fights of his MMA career, he was 17-0-1. He's run into a bit of a rough patch in his career. I believe 1-2 in his last three fights since that start. But he's shown a lot of good traits, a lot of good growth. And then seven fight night bonuses earned by Robert Whittaker, which does tie him for third most among active UFC middleweights. In 14 UFC appearances, he has cashed $50,000 checks for fight of the night 4 times and for performance of the night 3 times. Anderson Silva leads the way with 12 bonuses. And then finally, 10 knockout victories for Till among his career of his 18 wins. And we've seen that power. Both these guys carry power. I think it'll be a really interesting matchup. I don't think it's going to go to the ground a whole lot. I think both guys will want to settle it on their feet with strikes. And I really don't know who to pick. I was leaning towards Robert Whittaker, but the more I think about it, there's just something about Darren Till. I like his grittiness. I like the way he carries himself. I like the way that his kind of fighting, you know, his, I don't want to say moveset, that sounds more like a wrestling term, but just the way his fighting style has really come together since he's gotten into the UFC. So I think it'll be a tough fight. It'll be a close fight. I think I'm going to go with the underdog here. I'm going to go with Darren Till. I think he'll win it in the fourth round with a TKO over Robert Whittaker. And the main card does start at 5 o'clock here on the West Coast, so be sure to tune in for that. And it'll be a fun weekend of fights there in the UFC. But we are going to take a break. When we come back, the one and only Sax Man Rick Metz will be here in studio. He'll have at least one more what if One more what if. So we'll check on that when we come back here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
We are back in studio here, and it's Friday. It's the 2 o'clock hour, so who else is going to be here?
I'm here.
Besides the sax man himself, Rick Metz.
Hey, 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 the sax man cometh and the sax man goeth, baby.
Happy Friday, my man.
Happy Friday, baby. You ready to have a good weekend?
Oh my gosh, always.
I don't really have many plans except to drink and eat.
There you go. Well,
sleep,
you know what?
Too, in between.
I was going to say, you can do that, and you can have a little sports on in the background
exactly,
as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
Are you excited about?
I'm excited.
I mean, did you watch opening day at all last night?
Yeah, I did watch a little bit of baseball last night. I totally forgot to set the DVR to watch my Mets this afternoon, but I'll catch them this weekend.
They are in action. Give everyone a little update. Bottom of the sixth between Atlanta and the Mets, and it is still 0-0 between
DeGrom,
the two.
Baby.
Yeah,
when you got DeGrom pitching, it's a low-scoring game. It doesn't matter who's playing us. You know, rarely does DeGrom give up a lot of runs.
And he'll have to carry that Mets starting rotation this
year. It's been bumped around a little bit. Syndergaard hurt. And I don't know what's going on there, so that's for sure. But let's talk a little bit more baseball. Where are the Blue Jays going to play home games? They're talking Camden Yards in Baltimore.
They were. What I heard today, it does sound like they will be playing in Buffalo.
They're going to play in Buffalo.
It does. So they'll play that first home series against Washington.
Yeah.
With two games as home, two games as away.
Right.
And then it seems as though Buffalo is the spot.
Okay. Well, you know, what is it, a Triple-A ballpark?
It is, yeah. So that's the reason why they're keeping that first home series in Washington, so they can make some adjustments to all the facilities there.
Right,
but, yes, it is.
They really wanted to play in a Major League ballpark.
They did.
They really did, but it just wasn't working out.
And I don't know why it didn't work out in Baltimore. So I know the Pennsylvania State authorities said you can't play in Pittsburgh,
right.
But I didn't hear that same report coming in the Baltimore Orioles situation.
I didn't hear that coming out of Camden Yards either, but you know, I haven't seen the details.
So I'm not sure why that didn't get approved.
Let's go local.
All right,
Reno Tahoe senior summer games have been canceled.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
But it's a smart move, especially since you know all of our fabulous seniors are definitely in a higher risk. Mm-hmm. You know, category. So we want to keep everybody safe.
We do.
Let's talk a little bit football. New York Jets, New York Giants have announced that no fans will be at any of the home games in the Meadowlands all season. Period.
Yeah. Smart. Yeah.
And in every other ballpark, if they're allowing fans at whatever capacity they choose to allow fans, face masks will be required.
And honestly, I can't see anybody going over 25%. I mean, I even think 50% is way too.
I don't even think they're
going
to get that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anything, it's going to be around 20-25% capacity, and that's it.
At the most.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Did you see that Oakley has partnered with the NFL to make face shields for all the NFL players?
I knew that was an idea they had. I didn't know they had gotten a sponsor, gotten a partner.
They have it done, and they have all the face shields ready to go.
Okay.
But they are only recommended, not required yet. I think it'll be a smart move to require them.
Yeah, it will be. And then it'll be interesting to see how players respond to that. Cause I think it was J.J. Watt who came out and said that he didn't want to play with something that close to his face.
Because
he played, I think, with a face shield or something on in his first season or something like that with Houston and just despised it.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see if any players after that decide to maybe bow out.
I
want to
see them all wear like those basketball plastic face masks that they wear when you know, they get a nose or
a
cheekbone
broken.
Something, you know, something like that. I think they really accentuate everybody's cheekbones beautifully.
Would you get a good look at that through the helmet?
Probably
a little
could.
Bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've got TV close-ups.
That's true.
You know, so
that's true.
Work.
Zoom on in there. Get a tight shot.
And then the last thing I want to touch on here real quick is the Washington football team.
Yikes.
Which is their new name for right now.
Yeah.
Until they actually come up with a new name.
Well, until Dan Snyder wants to put the effort in to find a new name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they're now just known as Washington Football Team.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. That's about as safe as you can play it right there.
It is what it is, baby.
I mean, they'll have numbers on the helmets, and that's about it.
Exactly. Exactly.
What do you think about that? Because they were talking about the Red Tails as a possible name. And talking about Red Wolves came up. I mean, is there a name that either one of those two or just a different name that kind of stands out?
Nothing stands out to
me. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tricky.
Yeah, it's basically their decision. Whatever they come up with, it'll be far less offensive than the former name.
Let's hope so.
Yeah,
anyway,
well, I mean, can only hope so.
I don't know how I hope they don't screw that up. That would be a pretty amazing baffling there if they mess that up.
Well, so for the last month plus, we've been diving deep into NFL what ifs.
Your beautiful what ifs.
Oh, man. I know you're still dwelling on a couple of those.
I mean, you know which one I'm probably still thinking about, even a few weeks on.
Emmitt Smith with Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Yeah, hello.
Still thinking about that one.
It's a what if Herschel Walker had never gotten traded.
Yeah, it's a big one, too. Yeah.
But here's one of my biggest ones that I want to share with everybody.
Ooh, all right, here we go.
What if the merger had never happened? NFL merger had never happened because there were so many rules, policies, and styles adopted from the former AFL that make the league what it is today. So if the merger doesn't happen, did the NFL remain the stuffy league of the power sweep? Would the AFL have remained the flamboyant league of vertical pass and other innovations we now see in the NFL combined? Would there be any interleague play at all?
Yeah.
Until a Super Bowl, or would there even be a Super Bowl?
Would you even have that game?
Yeah, exactly. Would there be a Super Bowl? Wow. Right.
It's hard to imagine a world without that championship game in there. But there was a time when that was the case.
Right, it was just the NFL championship and it was just the AFL championship.
You had the two leagues. They had their own season.
And, of course, the driving force behind making that merger was the great Al Davis. If it wasn't for Al Davis, in all honesty and all seriousness, I know there's a lot of Raider haters out there. I still love you because I'm a Raider lover. Hardcore, old school Raiders fan. Go Raiders!
Goodness.
I'm sorry, I have to once in a while.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's part of me.
But it's been a little while since you've done it, so I'm okay with it.
That's true. Al Davis definitely was the driving force behind making that merger happen. He was the one that put Pete Rozelle in the spot that he had to acquiesce and make that merger happen. Because, as I said, it could have gone on, without the merger.
Yeah.
And the other big question is, if the merger had never happened, would the AFL now be the dominant league? Because the NFL was the stuffy league. They were the power sweep league. They had great teams, Vince Lombardi's Packers. But the AFL, showed its dominance in a lot of the early Super Bowls after the Lombardi Packers won the first two.
Yeah, that's true.
The AFL won a big bunch of the Super Bowls, right after Lombardi's Packers from Super Bowl III on, of course, starting with the Jets winning in Super Bowl III, Dolphins winning two in a row, Chiefs winning one.
Yep.
I mean, that's
it's significant. I mean, just think from not only from an NHL or NFL perspective, from a cultural perspective. I mean, that one game became the one lone game everyone was waiting for at the end of the season.
Exactly. And everybody tunes into the Super Bowl, whether they're football fans or not.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you go to a party for that game, whether or not whether they're interested in the game or more of the commercials or none or both or whatever. Yeah, or just
if
the party.
You're just interested in the party and hanging out with
everybody.
It's
become a huge event. So, you think about a country divided, some wanting to watch the AFL championship, not caring about the NFL, and vice versa.
And could you imagine the rivalry between the two leagues? I can imagine the championship games for both leagues being held on the same day.
Yeah, exactly.
And having to fight each other for a viewing audience.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Just the whole implication of their having been a merger.
Yeah, again, and thinking of just no Super Bowl at all.
Right.
So you just have the two respective championship games, then there's the year-long debate, essentially, until the next season starts.
Which
team would have won between those two?
Yeah, who would have won that playoff game, that final playoff game, to determine which team was better.
Yeah, and to answer one of the other questions as well, I think you would have seen styles clash.
Yeah.
Because guys from the NFL would have lost their jobs, maybe found a job in the AFL, brought some of those tendencies over, and vice versa. So I think you would have gotten to a point where you saw a little bit of both in both leagues.
Yep.
But that is quite the thought.
Exactly.
It's quite a world to try to picture.
And would the CFL Grey Cup be an even bigger attraction?
Ooh, I didn't even think about that.
The Canadian Football League.
Yeah.
I love watching the Canadian Football League. When I was touring with bands up in Canada in the 80s, I went to a ton of CFL games. I even got to see Doug Flutie play.
Oh, my gosh. Of course you did.
Of course I did. I've seen everybody.
Oh, my gosh. You have.
I've done everything.
Oh, my gosh.
I've been
ridiculous.
Everywhere, man. But, no, I had the honor of getting to see Flutie play back in the day.
Wow.
In the CFL. But, you know, the CFL is a lot of fun, and the Grey Cup is their biggest day of the year. You know, that game is just an amazing attraction. I've gone to some CFL parties, you know, if I happen to be up in Canada at the time, and I've watched, you know, the Grey Cup as often as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine, though, if the Grey Cup would now compete with the AFL championship game and the NFL championship game if there was no Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And if there had been no merger.
Because the selling point is, hey, we have an outright champion up here in Canada.
Exactly.
Come on up and see the show.
Come on up. Drink some blue.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, man, that is quite the what if.
Exactly. That's my biggest what if for now. Because
for
I
now.
Have more what ifs coming up for you. I've been diving a little deeper, and there's some that I didn't get to
over the course
of this last month plus. We've been talking about what ifs. We've got to dive a little deeper. Plus, I have some other interesting stuff that I'm going to bring to you this next week and get off the what ifs for just a little bit.
Ooh, all right.
We're going to change it up. You know me. I love to dive deep, but
it's not always
the same stuff.
Teasing it a week out.
Oh, got to tease
it a week out.
We'll just wait till you check out my subject matter starting next week. We're to move on from the what ifs.
It's got to be FCC appropriate. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, it is.
That's all I'm saying.
It's totally
okay.
FCC appropriate.
That's all right. All right.
Yeah, without a doubt. And it's, let's put it this way. It can be construed as slightly Raider-centric.
Oh, good Lord. All right. Well, I may be cutting your mic then a little bit next week.
I don't think so, because you'll be right in on this with me, because I do have your Chargers included in here. You know,
all right. I mean, it's a coin toss whether or not it's a positive or negative light to it, but...
Well, you know, who knows what evil lurks.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, nothing like giving a little bit of a ration to the L.A. football Clippers.
Oh, that's
I mean,
nice.
I'm sorry, the L.A. Chargers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, that's what I've been meaning to ask you. When the team moved from San Diego to Los Angeles, I stopped referring to the city. I just called them the Chargers.
Right.
Will you do that as well, or will you call them the Vegas Raiders?
Have been for years. When they left Oakland the first time, they were no longer the Oakland Raiders. They were just the Raiders for me.
All right.
They've left Oakland a second time. They're no longer the Oakland Raiders. They're just the Raiders
for
me.
All right. Well, that answers that question, then.
I couldn't bring myself in any way, shape, or form to say, I still can't say it. And I won't be able to bring myself in any way, shape, or form to be able to say Las. See, I still can't do that either. It's just the Raiders, baby.
All right.
Just win, baby.
Oh, my goodness
Raiders.
Gracious. All right. That's a good place to end it. He is Saxman Rick Metz. Rick, thank you so much for always coming in here. It's always fun to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. The sax man cometh and the sax man goeth. I'm done. Down the road, motors, baby.
We'll be back to wrap up the show here on this Friday here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
What has happened on this day in sports history? Well, let's dive into that as we wrap up this Friday, July 24th. And on this day in 1909, Brooklyn Dodger Nap Rucker strikes out 16 Pittsburgh Pirates. What a day to have there. In 1931, Paavo Nurmi runs a world record in the 2 mile with a time of 8 minutes and 59.6 seconds. That is blistering pace. He's appeared on this list quite a few times throughout the months, with a lot more of those running records there. On this day in 1941, Red Sox Lefty Groove, 41 years old, wins his 300th game. On this day in 1958, Ted Williams is fined $250 for spitting at Boston fans again. Again, he did that. On this day in 1961, Roger Maris hits 4 home runs in a doubleheader. On this day in 1977, Pete Rose passes Frankie Frisch as a switch hit leader with 2,881. On this day in 1979, Red Sox Carl Yastrzemski hits his 400th career home run. And on this day in 1983, it was the infamous Pine Tar Game. George Brett's home run is disallowed against the Yankees after it was found that he violated the rules of Major League Baseball in terms of pine tar on your bat. That's a great video, too, by the way. If you want to go on YouTube and watch that, I'm sure you've seen it at times if you haven't been able to the video at the event. But, you know, Brett is essentially sitting in the dugout. He's made his trot around the bases. He's sitting in the dugout, and all of a sudden there's all the umpires come together looking at his bat, you know, putting it down to the plate, taking some measurements, and all of a sudden they point to him, and they make the out symbol, and he sprints onto the field. And it gets right up in the umpire's face. It's quite the video if you haven't seen it. I recommend it. You go watch it. It's pretty entertaining. 2005, in the 92nd Tour de France, Lance Armstrong retires after winning a record 7th consecutive victory, but of course is disqualified in 2012 for doping, so officially the race has no winner. Then finally, on this day in 2019, 19-year-old Hungarian swimmer Krzysztof Milak breaks Michael Phelps' 10-year-old 200-meter butterfly world record at the World Championships in South Korea, swimming a time of 1 minute 50.73 seconds, 7/10 faster than Michael Phelps. Those are some events that happened on this day in history. Big thank you to Rick. Big thank you to Terry for being a part of the show. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend out there. You can follow me on Twitter at My2Spenceworth. Catch up with podcasts and interviews on the Spencer Wilson Show page at sportsreno.com. And I'll talk to you Monday at 2 o'clock. Have a great weekend. Peace.